What did you just say?
I broke my crown.
Like your tooth? Or your tiara?
No, like a crown, like that you color with.
A crayon.
Like you color a picture with, like my lip crown is what I broke.
That's what you're talking about, your lipstick?
Yeah, lip crown. Like you color your lip.
It's crayon. Say it with me. Crayon.
It is not. Okay, I'm sorry. I broke my crayon.
There you
my
go.
Crayon.
There you go. Glad you got it sorted out.
It's Tuesday, and you're listening to Murder Unscripted.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Murder Unscripted. I'm your host, Ed Hydock, and with me, as always, is the great Melissa Spivey.
Oh, I like that.
I give you a new title every week.
It's like the great and powerful Oz, right? But this is even better.
We are now in week two of our block on hedonistic thrill killers, and
It's been kind of crappy so far after I successfully ruined our week last week and my mood ring.
You definitely did. That was probably one of the sadder stories and that I've ever heard. And I think it's because, like you had mentioned, it's our, when you tie it into your own family and you make it personal, these things really, they hit you.
Yep. We were fine until you brought up the kids and we were both like, oh my God.
Yeah, that was sad. Anyway, I wish I could say this week was better, but for this story, we need to go back to Bucks County, Pennsylvania, which is just a stone's throw from where we're at now, essentially the Philly suburbs, 2017. And at the time, I was working on, as a freelance producer on a few different shows, but living in the area where these events happened, it was one of the most terrifying things because we were watching this. You were too, Melissa. We were watching this all play out live. And I remember the headlines. I remember the stories. I remember the newspaper articles. It was a very big deal. And it's incredibly unusual in the true crime world to be able to produce a story about a local case that you had followed along the way. We're always reporting on these crimes from the 80s and the 90s and just however long ago. But this one, you lived it. And then you get to produce an episode about it. So this is the Lost Boys of Bucks County, part one. This will be a two-part episode. So, Melissa, let's get right into it. Take us into that time machine. I regret to inform you, I did not have a time machine sound effect.
I'm sitting here like your whole opening. I can't tell you what you said because I'm like, I wonder if he has my time machine.
I don't. But it is in the works. And in the works, meaning I've thought about it.
Great. So it's still up here instead of in my computer. Is that what you're saying?
It is. It is. So take us in the makeshift time machine for the time being back about, it's only not that far this time, only about 7 years.
Beep, boop, beep, boop. So yep. We're going back to 2017. So what the hell happened that year? Well, most importantly, everybody stop what you're doing. Take notes. My youngest fur baby, Milo, he was born in January. So write that one down. But with the rest of the world, so in the United States, we were jamming out to Despacito featuring Justin Bieber and Shape of You by Ed Sheeran. If you're a Star Wars fan, you were probably standing in line to see Star Wars The Last Jedi or nostalgically watching the live-action Beauty and the Beast. Great movie.
Ooh, remember that.
Maybe you were watching these movies while playing your Nintendo Switch, which was released in 2017. We were mourning Tom Petty and Bill Paxton of Titanic and Twister fame, which they're coming out with a new Twister. We're going to see it. Already got us tickets. They are.
When?
I don't know, but I saw it on TV and I'm super excited for it.
Well,
we're going.
Okay.
You know who else died in 2017? Hugh Hefner.
And this was
like prior to all the documentaries and the Quaaludes and. So, but that brings me to another big topic in 2017, Harvey Weinstein and the Me Too movement.
That feels like it was yesterday, that whole Me Too
movement. I didn't realize it was all the way back in 2017.
Crazy.
Well, that rocked not only the entertainment world, but the rest of us as well, especially when the movement brought down other scumbags like Kevin Spacey and Matt Lauer. And while all of this was going on, we were all trying to figure out what Trump meant with Kofif.
Oh, Kofifi.
Kofifi, yes.
That was an epic meme for about 6 months.
It really was. Well, that was 2017, so beep, boop, beep, boop. My time machine sounds.
That's so bad. We need something ASAP. That's my new priority, because that's awful.
Yep, number one.
Anyway, well, this story begins in Newtown, Pennsylvania, and this is a tiny little spit of land in right in the heart of Bucks County. It's only about 2,200 people that live there, and it's charming. This town is as charming as it gets. I mean, quaint little downtown shops, bucolic farmland, sprawling estates. Mm. I mean, you go, it's a lot of, do you know what I mean when I say old money?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
People so it there is, have had the same money in their families for generations and generations, and yeah.
Absolutely. So a lot of old money there. I mean, you'll be driving, it's like farmland, cow, and then boom, this like $2 million man, like out of nowhere, these beautiful homes. It really is an incredible place. And fun fact, founded by William Penn himself.
I did not know that.
So in 2017, the people of Newtown were celebrating the 4th of July in style. And this was a rare 4th of July because it happened midweek. It was a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So people were still partying though. Regardless, the people of Newtown, they had cookouts, they had big parade. Everybody had their donning their red, white, and blue, and they're in the holiday spirit, except for one couple, Richard and Sharon Patrick. So their 19-year-old grandson, who lives with them, his name is Jimmy, and he was named after the great Jimi Hendrix.
So, I love that. Jimmy That's was awesome. So cool.
So Jimmy was at a 4th of July party with some friends, and he had stayed out past midnight, came home, went right to bed. So now we're at July. But this story is going to be a little piecemeal because it's happening in some different locations throughout the county. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, you're going to hear things sometimes out of order, but I promise you I'll connect all the dots.
Yes.
So Jimmy's out 4th of July, Tuesday night with some friends, stays out past midnight, comes home late, goes to bed. The next day, Jimmy heads to work at his part-time job. And I'm actually not sure where he worked, but it doesn't play into the story. I just can't remember where he worked. So Jimmy gets home around 5 o'clock, says hi to his grandparents who he lives with, and he tells them he's going out again. This time is just for a little bit. He's going to meet some old friends from high school. He went to Holy Ghost Prep. He was going to meet some old friends at Chick-fil-A for some dinner. And Jimmy had a car, but he wasn't driving today. So his car was still outside.
Okay.
Someone was going to pick him up. So his grandmother, Sharon, gives Jimmy a kiss and off he goes. But a few hours pass and then a few more and Jimmy doesn't return. And it should be known that Jimmy's a super responsible kid. He has an incredible relationship with Richard and Sharon, his grandparents. And whenever he comes home from being out, he will find them and tell them he's back safely. And even if it's the middle of the night, he'll wake them up, say, "Hey, I'm home." They are thankful to be woken up to know that Jimmy's safe.
Of course.
And
I was just going to say just about your documentary real quick. I've seen this documentary probably more times than you have.
Guaranteed.
And it's funny because I didn't know you when this documentary came out. And I love this documentary. I make everyone watch it. I think I made my mom sit there and watch it with me at least 5 times. But it's so good. And I felt like you guys did a really good job connecting with the families. And I felt like Sharon and Richard, Jimmy's grandparents, seemed like the kindest, most amazing people on the planet. And usually these cases, well, I want to say usually these cases don't get to me. And I promise that's true regardless of last week and now this week. No. But they just make me so sad. And there's one part in the documentary where you're interviewing Richard, the grandfather, and he talks about how I did everything with Jimmy that a father would do. Mm-hmm. And because they're his primary caregivers, they're his guardians. And the way Sharon talks about Jimmy, it was clear that he was just like the light of their lives. And I can imagine, like, I feel like people with their grandchildren, they're already the light of their lives. And then having like primary guardianship, I can just imagine that their love for him was just insane. And you watch Sharon and you just want to give her a hug and be like, "Sharon, I'm so sorry. Like, he
And that's not an act. That's not an act at all. And I'm not saying it ever is. I mean, rarely have we run into people that we interview who are faking it, like for attention or to make themselves seem like they were more involved. I mean, most people are very genuine, and these people were no exception. The Patricks, they are amazing people. And what you saw is who they are. And we're going to get into a little bit later in the story why they were so attached to Jimmy. But the reality is, you're right. I mean, they were his primary caregivers.
Yeah, they were his guardians, and it's clear how much they loved him.
Right. So now we're kind of we're at a spot where Jimmy's not coming home, and the hours are ticking by. There's no phone call, there's no text, there's nothing. So you can kind of see why the Patricks were beginning to worry. So the rest of the night comes and goes, the night of the 5th. And although uncharacteristic, the Patricks hope that Jimmy just decided to stay out at a friend's house. Maybe he was at some girl's house, you know, and just didn't let him know. After all, he's 19. He can do what he wants, you know. So, but come Thursday, July 6th, they haven't heard a peep. And Sharon has been blowing up Jimmy's phone. And we're talking like, I think there were a dozen phone calls, 22 text messages. Wow. And Jimmy always responded. So they were, needless to say, in quite a panic.
Yeah.
So that morning, Richard and Sharon start calling all of Jimmy's friends. No one has heard or seen him. No one has heard from or seen him. Apologies. And get this, the friends that Jimmy was supposed to meet up with, they said he never went to Chick-fil-A. And that's kind of a big deal, because for now, as far as the Patricks knew, Jimmy never, ever lied to them. But it really seems like in this instance, he did.
You know what, though? He's a 19-year-old kid. I think we all lied to our parents. And no, I know that we all lied to our parents at some point. I mean, he didn't do anything different than any single one of us have done at one point.
Absolutely. And I want to be clear about that, that Jimmy was a good kid. And we're bringing up the fact that he lied only because it really is important to the timeline. Mm-hmm. And it's something that differs so greatly from his personality. So, and this will all come together. So around noon on July 6th, the Patricks call the Newtown police, and they get the usual story. Jimmy's a teenager. It's the 4th of July. He's probably in a car with some girl or somewhere out with his friends. And Richard's like, his car's in the driveway. So,
right.
So, but police say you have to wait 24 hours. So literally a few hours, we're at like the 19-hour mark at this point. And Richard, so they wait. They wait a couple more hours and then call right back and report Jimmy missing. And we've talked about this before in the Blackwood case, but to have to report a loved one missing, I don't know, to me feels like the ultimate, I don't even know what you would call it. It's the moment that things, that worry turns to true panic and things get very real.
It's the moment shit gets real. Absolutely. And watch, this never ceases to make me angry in every true crime case, because I feel like it's 9 times out of 10 the same story. And it just makes me so angry. Like, I thought the whole 24-hour missing thing was false. I thought we've debunked that. And, like, you shouldn't have to wait to report. I understand being like, my 20-year-old kid's been missing for 10 minutes. Like, all right. But after X amount of hours, and especially when you know your child better than the police do, to be like, this is not like them.
Right, right. And it would be hard for any grandparent, but especially the Patricks. And here's to kind of piggyback on what you were talking about earlier and how great the Patricks were. So Jimmy's mother, she battled schizophrenia her whole life, his biological mother. So she knew she would be unable to care for Jimmy. And so the Patricks were at an impasse. I mean, it was either put up Jimmy for adoption or they take care of him themselves. And that's a tall task, because at the time they were in their 50s. And I couldn't imagine having to take on a newborn in my 50s, but that's what they did. And they are seriously the most amazing people you will ever come across.
Oh my God. And I'm sure that it was never a second thought. Like, that was their baby.
Yeah. And they treated him that way. Sharon said in her interview about Jimmy, Jimmy was the love, quote, Jimmy was the love of my life. And I always felt I always felt like we were really soulmates. I loved him like he was my son. And Richard did. He did all the things that a dad would do. And it was probably harder to do when you're a little older to keep up with a young kid like that. But Richard did it. I mean, he would, there was a great video we played in the doc. It was a home movie he was shooting hoops. He was out playing basketball with Jimmy, and like Jimmy launched it over, made like this shot from across the street. And it was just, It was awesome. And you see Richard's face and he's over the moon.
He's so excited. He's so happy.
So Richard did all of the extracurriculars while Sharon helped Jimmy all the way through high school at Holy Ghost. And after graduation, Jimmy headed to Baltimore, Maryland, where he attended Loyola University. And he made the dean's list. And during his second semester, he got into a business honors fraternity. So this kid, he was going places. He had big things in store.
Oh, he definitely was. And he was so handsome. I love his picture. He's very all-American boy next door. You know who he reminds me of? And I realize this young man is not American, but
no.
He kind of reminded me of Robert Irwin, Steve Irwin's son.
Oh, the Croc Hunters kid. Yeah.
Yes,
oh, my gosh.
They look very much alike.
They do. They definitely do. Absolutely. And so once Jimmy was reported missing, the first thing police do is ping his phone. Boom. They get a hit. Pings in Springfield, Delaware County. So we're about 40 miles south of the Patrick's home. So if he was just going for a short time, his phone is now 40 minutes away. So there's a big red flag right there. No, but the Patricks are like, Jimmy doesn't know anyone in Springfield, Delaware County. So along with all of Jimmy's friends, they go there and they go to this park and they just start plastering it. They're like, where will people congregate in this kind of rural community? So they head to a park, plaster Jimmy's pictures all over. They pass out little flyers like, have you seen him? Can you help us find him? And there's just no luck. Needless to say, police can't do a whole lot at this point. And it's very frustrating for the Patricks because they all they want is help. Their loved one is missing and no one was stepping up at the time. So what they do is they hire a man named Dan Boyle. And Dan Boyle is a former police officer turned private investigator. And side note about Dan, another great guy. He actually passed away a few years ago, which I had learned after the doc was done, obviously. It was so sad to hear because during filming, he had welcomed us into his home. And we did some B-roll shots, we explained what B-roll was last episode or last block, but it's all the shots that are not interview shots. So it's filler stuff that you can cut together. And this was my favorite Dan Boyle story because at the time I was driving this sweet Dodge Challenger.
Midlife crisis car.
100%. 100%. And I stand by it. I don't care.
Now he drives a minivan. No, I'm just
kidding. Don't be spreading vicious lies.
I wouldn't be your friend.
How dare you? But so I roll up in this Challenger, which here's an interesting little thing. I try not to, it was my only vehicle at the time, but you try not to do that. Like you don't want people to see I considered that a really nice car and I'd worked hard and I saved up a lot for that car. And we're rolling up to people, to victims' families' houses and stuff. And they're seeing like a profit, like you're profiting off these stories. Like, wow, look how much money they're making in the murder business off my loved one. And that's not the case.
My loved one, yeah.
Yeah. So we're conscious of stuff like that too. It's things that those people don't really know that kind of side of things. But anyway, I roll up in this Challenger and Dan, his jaw dropped and he was like, I need to drive that thing. And I was like, I think we're going to get some driving shots with you. So I'll tell you what, for doing these shots with us, you can drive my car. So when you see the documentary, that's my Challenger that he's driving and we are whipping through the neighborhood. And I'm like, Dan, aren't you a cop? And he's like, he had the time of his life. So that's my Dan Boyle story. What a good man.
I love that.
Anyway, so on July 7th, Dan begins his search for information. And here's where things really get interesting. Dan goes online and on social media to look for any information he can find about Jimmy. And he finds that, as young people do, they're all talking about Jimmy. And that's not all. People are also talking about another missing young man, 19-year-old Dean Finicaro. And he was from Middletown Township. So we're only about 5 miles from Newtown, also in Bucks County. So now there's a creepy pattern developing. Private Investigator Boyle was trying to come up with, he had the same questions, like, what's going on here? So he immediately gets on the phone with the Finicaros, Anthony and Bonnie. And Anthony, we just talked about his personality a little bit. Anthony is a typical Philly guy, hard-nosed, blue-collar, speaks his mind, and he was angry. He was the angriest of the family members, and I'll tell you why a little bit later, maybe in part two, because he had very good reason. And Bonnie is just super sweet. They also opened their home to us, opened their treasure trove of photos and videos to us. I mean, we have stacks of stuff about Dean, and it really helped us kind of make this documentary stand out.
Yeah.
So Anthony Finocchiaro tells Boyle that he's never heard of Jimmy Patrick, but he'll tell him whatever he wants to know about Dean. And unlike Jimmy, Dean was a bit of a wild child. He was a thrill seeker who was always looking for adventure. He'd been busted a few times by police, not doing anything bad, just mischievous.
Yes.
Like the one time he and his buddies were riding their ATVs down the street, doing wheelies, weaving in and out of cars, just boys being boys.
So typical. Yep.
And we used a video. They had a home video of it. It was them. You know how boys do it, just putting it online.
Oh, so, of course. GoPro so Anthony, was like the worst and the best.
And the best, right? So regardless, Anthony says Dean was a good kid, regardless of those little run-ins. And there was no good reason for him to be missing.
Right.
And here's a good spot to remind everyone that this is an active investigation. So things are unfolding simultaneously in different parts of the county, which I had mentioned earlier, where you have Jimmy Patrick missing. So that's one investigation. Now Dean is missing, a whole separate police department, whole separate investigation. So if that makes sense.
Well, and that can complicate things also, that it's different departments. And I know that in 2017, things are a lot better than they were even probably in 2007 or 1997, where, you know, they do, like, because of technology, you can communicate faster with other departments, but it's still like two things are happening in completely separate departments. So who knows how long that could take to really connect.
Exactly right. And that was the case here. That's what was happening here. So I want to stick with Dean Finocchiaro for now, the Middletown.
Mm-hmm.
So Anthony and Bonnie contact the Middletown Police Department, and Officer Megan Freer responds to the Finocchiaro's place. And Megan is what an incredible person and police officer she was. She used to be a city cop in Philadelphia. And then I think around 2016 moved over to Middletown, kind of in the country, which was a huge change from working in Philadelphia. So Philly, there's always something happening every single day, busy as it gets. And Middletown, not so much. You know, this is a quiet community for the most part.
Yes.
So a call about a missing teenager was definitely something that she took seriously. Especially because, get this, Megan Freer was one of the officers who had busted Dean in the past for riding his ATV on the street. So she knew of Dean, she knew his personality and knew who he was. So it kind of hit close to home.
Aww.
So Officer Freer sits down with the Finocchiaros and to take this missing persons report and find out everything she can about Dean's disappearance. And as the story goes, Bonnie had been spending the holiday weekend down the shore with some girlfriends. And we say down the shore, basically the Jersey Shore. It's a local turn of phrase.
And that's Dean's mom, Bonnie.
That is Dean's mom, Bonnie Finocchiaro, correct. So she wasn't around when all this began, which was an incredible... So Dean and Anthony, his dad, because mom was away, had this time to share some one-on-one time. And these guys were buddies. These were not just father-son, they were best friends. So this was a good time for some one-on-one time. And Dean worked at a local burger and ice cream shop. He was a cook, but he had off on Fridays. Anthony had to work, but he returned home around 4:30, immediately took a shower. And when they were done, when he was done, Anthony asked Dean if he would like to go get something to eat for dinner. And Dean's favorite meal was sushi. So they went out for sushi. After dinner, they come home and Anthony was down in the basement doing some laundry. And he hears Dean yell from upstairs. He goes, "Oh, running out back in 15 minutes. And Anthony, he's a grown kid. He can do what he wants. But Anthony's like, who are you going with? And Dean says, "Some neighborhood kid." So that was kind of the last time that Anthony heard from Dean. And all he knew was that he was leaving with some neighborhood kid for 15 minutes.
Right.
And Dean told Anthony everything. This was a best friend relationship in addition to being a father-son relationship. So it was, he believed him. He took him at his word.
100%. And why would you not? I mean, when I was his age, my friends and I used to do that dumb stuff. Like, I had a friend who'd be like, "Hey, I'm running to Wawa. You want to go with me?" Sure. Like, I'll literally be gone for 15 minutes.
Yep. And it was no big deal whatsoever.
Yep.
So, but 15 minutes passes, half hour passes, an hour passes, and time's ticking and Dean's not coming home. So now Anthony is terrified. He has no idea where he went, were who Dean left with. And you can tell from his interview just how worried Anthony was. He was, the way he described it, he's like, we had to bleep what he was saying, but I mean, yeah. he's how many miles he put on that floor pacing. He too was blowing up Dean's phone like Sharon was doing with Jimmy, and there's no answer. So Anthony calls Bonnie down the shore and tells her something seriously wrong. And yeah. Bonnie ends up cutting her girl's weekend short and immediately rushes home.
I can't imagine. I mean, they lived, we know where they lived, and we're not sure what shore she went to, but she was at least an hour and a half away, I would yeah. be willing to bet.
Yeah.
So to get that call and be that far away, I can't even imagine just how long that car ride must have taken to get home. How long it felt like it must have taken.
Sure. Absolutely. So it's Saturday, the July 8th at this point, and okay. Dean doesn't show up for work. So again, we have this situation where you now have two boys who don't appear to know each other. They're both in Bucks County and both missing. Is this a coincidence? And before you answer, I should tell you that Dean's phone wasn't pinging anywhere. It was just off. So now you also have a 19-year-old who is not using his phone, which is unheard of.
Yeah, very.
So tensions are running pretty high at this point with both of these families and with police and with residents. I mean, this was a big news story that was unfolding for the county, and we saw it, Melissa. I mean, yes. It was, man, once that first article hit about Jimmy, it was like boom, 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 rapid fire, like updates every couple hours of just strange, strange things that went on.
It was on every single channel, just even when just Dean and Jimmy were missing.
Right.
And you turned it on and, you know, 6ABC, CBS3, NBC10, like it was just on all the time because, and I hate when people say this, but this is a small town. It doesn't happen here. It doesn't.
Right. Right. It does. It actually doesn't.
It literally doesn't.
And this is, and we're getting information. It's coming fast and furious, the reports, because, and as news agencies do, they just want to be the first to report on something. So even if they don't have a lot of information, and that's what was happening, is you were getting bits and pieces of information from all these different news outlets trying to put together the puzzle as to what happened, and nobody could. So in Middletown, Officer Freer begins her investigation. Meanwhile, the Finicaros are also doing their own, and they are digging to the most powerful tool that you can possibly use in situations like this, especially when involving a teenager, is social media. So they get on Dean's Facebook page and start hitting up all of his friends. Everyone gets back to him worried about Dean, but they're saying they haven't heard from him, but they're all worried. And as they're kind of going down the list of people, they get to one who isn't responding to anything. His name's Cosmo DiNardo. And some of Dean's friends suggested the two might actually be together. So this was something they obviously wanted to pursue. Like some people that knew Cosmo were acquaintances with Cosmo. Mm-hmm. They knew he and Dean had a friendship. So it was like, maybe they're together. He's not responding. Dean's nowhere to be found. Maybe they're together. So Cosmo was a 20-year-old from Bensalem. And the Finicaros knew him, but not personally, just his name, because about a week prior to Dean disappearing, Dean was out with friends. Anthony and Bonnie were lying in bed. It was late at night. And Anthony says, where did Dean go? And because Dean actually didn't have a car, so he couldn't drive. So he needed to be taken everywhere he went. So Bonnie was like, oh, he's just with some friends and he's getting a ride home with a kid named Cosmo. And Anthony's direct quote was, who the fuck is Cosmo? Like he didn't know Cosmo. And Bonnie's like, I don't know. So they knew Cosmo was a kid that their son hung around with, but that was about it. Just to recap, so we don't lose track of things. So 19-year-old Jimmy Patrick goes missing from his grandparents' home in Newtown on July 5th. 2 days later, on July 7th, 19-year-old Dean Finicaro disappears from his house in Middletown, about 5 miles away. So that's where we're at.
Okay.
But things are still happening in Newtown with Jimmy Patrick. So I'm going to stay, even though they are, I'm going to stay with Middletown for now, just for the sake of clarity.
Okay.
And that's where the case ultimately breaks open. So based on what Dean's friends were saying, Officer Megan Freer knows that Cosmo DiNardo may have some information on Dean's whereabouts. So the first thing she does is do some research on the DiNardos and find out they own two properties in Bucks County. One is this kind of upscale home in an affluent section. It's a cul-de-sac in Bensalem, but that's their main home. So that's where the DiNardo family lives. The other is this massive, massive compound, and it's in Solbury. So, and I don't use the term massive lightly. This was I'm talking 100 acres. It was, wow. It was so big that it encompassed two addresses. It was like situated on a corner. So you had Lower York Road, and then around the corner was Aquatong Road. And between the two addresses, there's a main house. There's another little kind of dilapidated house around the corner. There's some outbuildings, some garages, some farm, like grain silos. It was this gigantic property. When we filmed there, you could actually only see the main buildings with a drone. Like, we couldn't film their house. Oh, we had to get a drone up in the air. Yeah. And like fly it in and just kind of shoot over top, which is legal.
Okay. I was wondering but I was like, maybe I shouldn't
have. No, it's okay. and there's corners that get cut, but not in this one. It was pretty, we had a permit. We were flying to, and interestingly, Trump was, our drone day, here's a little behind the scenes tidbit. So our drone day was pushed back, I think two or three times, because Trump was at his golf course in Jersey, it was in that circle where, like, while he's there, nobody can fly, you know, this far around him. So like, it was like, man, you screwed our shoot up. Thanks a lot.
Wow.
Hope you had a good round. But this was an imposing place, to say the least. Big iron gate surrounded by these creepy old trees. And I'll try and find a pic on Google that I can put up. But to put you on the map, this compound is about 2 miles away from a place called Peddler's Village. And as the crow flies. So, and Peddler's Village, Melissa, you know, is this like artsy, how would you call it? An artsy shopping center. It's got restaurants. Yeah. It's got antique shops.
It's got a lot of really fun, eclectic little stores. And actually, they have a really fun dog store there.
Oh, really?
Where you can get the funnest stuff for your dogs and like decor. And it's great.
That's awesome. Well, so remember I said that Dean's phone was off or the battery died, so it couldn't be pinged. So what Officer Freer did was she asked the phone company for the device's last known activity. Mm-hmm. And they told her it was used in the Solbury area on July 7th, the same exact day that Dean vanished. Mm-hmm. So now it was kind of more important than ever that police check this place out. So Officer Freer gets a hold of Officer Gary Forrester, who he was of the Solbury Police Department. And he was at the time, he was simply the officer on duty the night this all happened. So
now we have a third department getting mixed in.
Exactly. Because now Solbury, this compound is now playing a role. Maybe like they just know that this is kind of, this area is starting to become suspicious. Mm-hmm. So Gary Forrester just was lucky enough to be the investigator on duty that night. So he took the call and he was only hearing bits and pieces as well. So Officer Freer gets him up to speed on everything she knows. She's like, I have this missing young man, Dean Finocchiaro. His cell phone was last used in this area. And there's a chance he was last seen with this other young man who has property in the area, Cosmo DiNardo. So can we check those properties just to see if they're there? And Forrester obviously realizes that the stakes are high at this point. So he agrees to accompany Megan Freer to the DiNardo's place. And when the duo arrives, it is late. We're after dark. We're talking late at night, like 2 o'clock in the morning.
So before we started this, I recently rewatched the documentary. It had been probably a couple months, available on Amazon Prime for to rent or buy.
That's true.
But this part actually shocked me because I think it was, you said it was late, but we're talking like 2 a.m.
Yeah, that's how urgent.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest, and maybe I just sound like an idiot, but like I honestly didn't think that they would go out there that late. Like to me, I assumed that they would be like, okay, we'll worry about it in the morning. So to see them go out there at 2 a.m. and not be like, let's worry about it on the next shift, I thought that was pretty incredible.
It is. And that just shows the level that everyone is on high alert, I guess is the best way to put it. So the first thing they do is they go to the Aquatong Road address. And this property sits right off the street. It's easy to see. There's a rundown building that it's like a beat up garage and this like farmhousey looking thing. And I'll pop up a couple. I took a couple personal photographs while I was there, and I'll put them up on the screen. But creepy is an understatement. We were there right as the sun was going down, and it's a terrifying place. You're out in the middle of nowhere, no vehicles, and it just looks abandoned to the naked eye. So first thing they do is go up to this creepy old farmhouse, peek in the windows, and it's like nobody's there. It's like nobody had lived there. It was dirty, decrepit.
No signs of life.
Exactly right. Nothing going on there. So about 2:40 a.m., the two officers leave the property, and Officer Freer was headed to the DiNardo's main property in Bensalem, while Officer Forrester was basically returning to his patrol in Solbury. But
okay.
As Forrester's leaving this property, he can't seem to shake the feeling that something is wrong here. Something's not adding up. It was just eating at him. So, and this is a great example of a gut feeling, like that while police act on credible information, hard evidence, this is a gut feeling. And he was just like, something about this place, all the circumstances. And after seeing this place, I feel like there's something there. And
his spidey senses were tingling.
His spidey senses. Absolutely. And he makes the decision. He calls Megan Freer and says, I'm going back. I want to check out that shed that we didn't get to check out on Aquatong Road. So Officer Forrester approaches the shed super cautiously. What does he see? Tire impressions. And no big surprise. It's a garage, right? After all.
Right.
But they're fresh. And the fact that this building looked so old and unused, to see fresh tire tracks there was like something doesn't make sense.
Yeah. That would be jarring, I think.
Right. So Forrester walks up to the garage, carefully cracks open the door, and he can see a car inside. And it's an early 90s Nissan sedan. No leaves, no dust, no cobwebs like you would expect to see if you saw the garage, you would expect an old car in there, just up on blocks or someone working on something. But this was a car that looked like it just pulled in there off the street. So that makes the tire tracks make sense. So what do you think, what would make sense what was that car doing there?
It's hiding. Someone's hiding it for some reason.
Exactly. Exactly.
Especially on this isolated piece of property in this shed that no one's probably looked in and goodness knows how long.
Right. Right. So Forrester takes a closer look and finds piles of clothes in the back seat. And the first thing he worries, it's this pile of clothes too. And he's like, body. There's a body under there.
Yeah.
And so he checks under and thankfully there isn't there. It was nothing. It was just a pile of clothes. So he runs the tag and it comes back registered to 21-year-old Thomas Mayo out of Plumstead. And for reference, Plumstead is about 10 miles from the DiNardo farm, but still within the Bucks County limits. And in case things couldn't get any worse, the dispatcher on the other end tells Forrester that Thomas Mayo was also reported missing earlier that day.
Oof. So we are on missing boy number 3, roughly the same age, within about 10 miles of each other.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it is. And this is just so out of character. And we're not done yet. So the second Forrester gets this information, he knows the case is bigger. It's getting bigger by the minute. Mm-hmm. And he checks the car for more clues, and he finds something troubling in the glove compartment. It's an insulin kit. And he learns that Tom Mayo is diabetic. So now we have a real problem. Talk about urgency before. You got diabetic Tom Mayo missing, and he doesn't have his insulin. So if nothing bad has happened to him already, it's only a matter of time until something does.
I feel like if this was, I mean, obviously it was a TV show, you made it into a documentary, but if this was like a thriller or something, like this is when a countdown timer would show up in the corner of the screen.
Right.
Like I feel like it's like, oh my God, shit just got real. We are on a time crunch. Like we are literally working against the clock to find out where at least Tom Mayo is.
Yeah, because even if this is nothing, even if this whole thing is just a weird set of circumstances, the only hard evidence is that Tom Mayo's missing and he doesn't have his insulin. What's worse is he searches the garage and he finds the title to Tom Mayo's car along with the keys hanging on the wall. And I'll see if I can dig up a picture. I might have one on my old drive, but it was really weird because it told him that somebody put that car there for a reason. Like, why on earth would a missing kid's car be in this garage and the title and the keys kind of up on the wall? It didn't make
a lot
of sense.
That's weird. Is a title something you're supposed to keep in your car, or do you keep that somewhere safe?
You're supposed to keep it somewhere safe, but maybe it was just in the car. Yeah, so I don't know how he ended up with it. Maybe Tom had it in his glove compartment.
But still, even if he wasn't, like, it just seems like that's something weird that's there.
Right.
Like, right. At least we know where the keys are. I guess that helps a little, but it's. I think it's weird that the title's there.
Absolutely. So Forrester contacts his chief, and efforts to find these boys really ramp up.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Officer Megan Freer is visiting the DiNardo's home in Bensalem, where the family lives, and he speaks to Cosmo DiNardo's mother. And Cosmo DiNardo's mother says she hasn't heard from Cosmo in a few days, but she'll try to get a hold of him. So the question now is, where's Cosmo? Is he missing like the others, or does he have something to do with this? Maybe he's off on some kind of summer adventure with these guys, and it's all nothing. It's all a big misunderstanding. But
yeah, I guess my first thought, I mean, I know the story, so that makes it tough, but I guess my first thought would be, if the mom said, I haven't seen him in a few days, I think I would immediately jump to, oh my God, we have another missing kid.
And that was
now we're with how many police departments? We have Megan Freer in one. We have the Solbury Township.
Mm-hmm. The
private investigator. Like, we have so many different departments working on this. And again, obviously, we know the Middletown and the Solbury police got together. But what mm-hmm. about all the other people?
Right. And it's because there's information unfolding at different speeds in different townships. And it's just mm-hmm. the puzzle pieces haven't connected for them yet. And and what you're about to learn is there was one more boy involved in this whole saga. Like, it's not over yet. So police in Solbury tracked down the missing persons report from Tom Mayo in Plumstead. And it explains that when Tom was last seen, he was with his best friend, 22-year-old Mark Sturgis. And the detectives say that Mark Sturgis hasn't been heard from either.
Oh, boy. So now we got five missing boys.
Essentially five missing boys. And if you notice in the doc, we took that opportunity to really paint Cosmo as possibly another victim. And I know it's a little less important here because we're still telling a story, but keeping the mystery alive isn't exactly paramount. But in the doc, on TV, it is. And so we really drug out the fact that could Cosmo be another victim? And it did cross detectives' mind for a while. But remember, a lot of things are pointing back to this Solbury property. Now you have this car discovery. So chances are it's a little more than just five boys missing.
Well, and there was no, at this point, there is missing person reports on four boys, but not on Cosmo.
Right. His mom's just like, I don't know where he is.
Right.
And I want to step back a little bit and tell you about the two boys, Tom Mayo and Mark Sturgis, the best friends, mm-hmm. before moving on with the investigation. So Tom's parents chose not to take part in the Lost Boys of Bucks County. And I'm not sure the exact reason, but they were the only family that wasn't on board. And that made it really hard to, you want the people closest to the victims to help you tell the story. No one mm-hmm. knows them like their loved ones. And not only that, you want personal photographs. You want firsthand accounts of what happened. It's the only way to really bring these stories to life. And when you're missing that, it makes it difficult. And so that was a big hurdle that we really had to work around. And luckily, I became very close with Mark Sturgis's family, specifically his mom, Amy, and his sister, Liz. And they are people that I still talk. We still get Christmas cards. I mean, we are still in contact. Amy's a very private person, but she chose to take part in this documentary. And without her, we wouldn't have had a story, because what she did is so she was mm-hmm. able to fill in that voice, because Mark was Tom's best friend. So they knew each other very well. Amy knew them both very well. And Amy had pictures of her son, Mark, with Tom in them. So we were able to utilize a different family to bring another family, to, if that makes sense, to kind of fill in the
gaps.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So Tom was an unassuming guy, super chill, fun-loving, mm-hmm. great personality. There were all these videos of him on Facebook just dancing around, being silly, being funny. Aww. And he was raised by a single mother. Despite that, he excelled. Tom was a varsity wrestler in high school and eventually went to East Stroudsburg University. Okay. So he was on the right path, yeah. And actually, college was where he developed type 2 diabetes. So this was a fairly recent diagnosis.
Oh, this was new. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, and then there's Mark. And Mark was I described him as a gentle giant. He was a big teddy bear. Dude was 6 feet tall, but
wow.
The nicest, softest hearted guy you would ever meet. And he played sports. He played guitar. Killer guitar player. Unbelievable. Wow. And he had known Tom for years. In fact, Mark's father had a construction business, and that's where Tom and Mark were actually working during the summer. They were just really incredible kids. And this construction job is what sparked them to actually be reported missing. So initially, Tom and Mark both didn't show up for work on Saturday morning, July 8th. And they were attached at the hip. So the thought was, wherever they are, they're together. So Mark and Tom, they're hungover, they were partying, they just, whatever. And Tom, Mark was the kind of guy who, he was different in the fact that he didn't care about his phone. He if that thing didn't charge for 3 days, whatever. He wasn't the guy who was always on social media, always on his phone. He didn't care. He was living life.
Right. But, good for him.
So that was another thought that crossed people's minds. Like, well, we haven't heard from Mark, but I mean, that's Mark, you know?
Right.
So eventually all of their parents, both sets of parents, realized that this wasn't the case and nobody could get a hold of Tom or Mark. So this was a problem. So here we have four missing boys now: Jimmy Patrick, Dean Finocchiaro, Tom Mayo, and Mark Sturgis, with the missing link being Cosmo DiNardo.
Right.
And at this point, he could either be missing as well or know what happened to these boys. So Officer Megan Freer and Middletown Police, they get savvy. They know the young boys are, so they know because they're young boys, they turn to social media. That's mm-hmm. where you get information these days, especially on young kids. And Freer convinces her chief to use the Middletown Police Department's Facebook page to make a post about Dean. And I'll pop a pickup. It's really just Dean. It's a picture of Dean. It's almost like a missing poster. It's a post saying, we're looking for information about this boy. Can you help? Because the other boys were outside of Middletown's jurisdiction, this post was just about Dean. Megan didn't make a post about all the boys that she knew about at this point. So, and this post blows up. It reaches something like 350,000 people in just 24 hours. Megan woke up the next day and she's like, this thing is taking off. She told her husband. And before long, people start making the connection, as people do on social media. Theories run wild, rumors run wild, but it doesn't take long for people to be like, there's four boys, all have kind of close ties, although they don't know each other, they're all kind of tied together in a similar way, and the legend of the Lost Boys of Bucks County was born.
Well, and I remember it being like, at least on the news, it was like, one boy's missing, another boy's missing. And then I personally feel like it got real when, and I still remember this, they showed a scene of someone's car, and the news did, and it had the insulin kit in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that it was like, and now we have two more missing boys. The clock is on. And just back to the social media, you know, that's such a double-edged sword, because to reach that many people that quickly is amazing. However, you hit the nail on the head when you said theories start to run wild.
Yeah, it can be a blessing and a curse because, yes, but now you have to weed out what's fact and what's fiction. And,
exactly.
And a lot of times, a lot of it's fiction just because people want to offer their 2 cents, but that 2 cents could be random. But at the same time, that random comment could be the one tip that breaks things open. But when you have limited manpower, you have to track down all these tips. So you have to figure out what's credible and what's not very quickly.
And let's remember that all of the departments involved, again, I don't know this for a fact, but I don't assume that they have a ton of experience in this sort of situation. This is
exactly,
again, these are small towns. This doesn't happen there. I feel like a lot of their biggest concerns were things like Dean riding ATVs down the street, not four boys are all of a sudden missing.
Right, exactly. And this Bucks County at that point had turned into a hub of media activity. I mean, this little tiny town now, all of a sudden, CNN, ABC, all these people were, the news was spreading and you were starting to see it on a national level. And that's when, for me, that it got real, because you follow these local stories and a lot of times you see a report about a missing boy. You don't, it's strange and you feel bad, but you don't think too much about it. You just want to updates. Like, did they find him yet? But when CNN and these bigger networks start covering this thing across the country, this rural Pennsylvania town now is the epicenter for something huge. And we were living it. We were here seeing it. And it was so strange and surreal. So behind the scenes, a countywide task force was being assembled, and they're basically game planning what to do about this mess. And meanwhile, the public is launching their own investigation. People started several Snapchat groups. And I've never been in a Snapchat group, but I'm too old for Snap. 44-year-old men rarely, I assume, use Snapchat, but what do I know?
Yikes. The ones on it probably shouldn't be on it, maybe. It
probably. So they started this Snapchat group called Tom WYA, as in like, where you at?
Yeah.
And then there was another one, Dean, where you at? And everybody's talking about Cosmo DiNardo, and what they were saying wasn't good. Mm-hmm. So a local reporter, he was actually an intern at the time with the Inquirer, and he joined one of these groups. His boss was like, you know what? You're going to act as a mole, and you're young. You're just breaking into the industry. I want you to just get on social media, find out what's happening. And because he was young, he could relate to the people that were starting these rumors and starting these things. And he was able to get into these, he had like exclusive access to some of these Snapchat groups. And he offered up some screenshots to the documentary. Someone DM'd him one of the most terrifying photos I've ever seen in my entire life. And we'll put it up right now. And this is, Melissa, you've seen this picture. This is Cosmo with a pistol, shirtless, with a crazed look in his eye, pointing this.
He looks deranged. That is
right?
There's so much, like, his eyes, and, you know, they say this. Actually, I think that Detective Steve Palin may have said something about this with Luis Perez, but just, like, there was evil in those eyes. That's this picture.
Absolutely. And the gun has a laser sight on it, and it's like the laser's kind of pointing right at the camera, and it's nightmare fuel. I mean, if this was somebody you knew and you saw this picture posted, I mean, I don't even know what you do with that. So
you unfriend them. That's what you do.
Right. Well, the second this photo was released, the entire complexion of the case changed. And now people in Bucks County were truly terrified.
So who is Cosmo DiNardo? We've talked about the other boys, but we really haven't talked about Cosmo DiNardo as a person.
Sure. Well, Cosmo was, man, spoiled brat, I guess is the term I would use. Yeah. Easily, thug is a term I'd use.
Wannabe thug.
Wannabe thug. Yeah. To put it lightly. Mm-hmm. I mean, his family was very prominent in Bucks County. Cosmo, in fact, was named after his grandfather, who was a real estate mogul, and his father owned a humongous concrete company in Northeast Philly, and his mother ran Bella Trucking. So their family were big. They were blue collar, but they almost like worked on in some form half of Bucks County. So they had quite an empire going, and Cosmo was essentially the heir to that empire. And all he had to do was behave, and Cosmo did not behave.
I hate this kid. You know how angry I get. I hate this kid. Like, with a passion. I cannot think of a bigger loser than Cosmo DiNardo. And you know what? To describe that entire family, I think the best way to say it is that all the money in the world cannot buy you class.
That's a great way to put it. And that's, I don't normally trash, I have feelings on these perpetrators. I don't usually trash them publicly. Cosmo DiNardo deserves every bad word that's ever said about him.
That's why you have me. You know I love talking shit. This isn't even talking shit. This is the truth.
These are stating facts, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so on these Snapchat threads that I had mentioned, girls were popping up on them talking about run-ins that they've had with Cosmo. And they said that Cosmo would harass them incessantly online, mm-hmm. trying to get them to have sex with him. And some even shared screenshots of the conversations, and they are disgusting. The things that he...
Foul.
And one thing was clear. Confidence was not an issue for Cosmo. This guy had no problem with confidence. I think he thought that his family's notoriety would just make women's pants fall off and that right. he could just rely on that. But that was not the case. Cosmo was not just a perv. If anyone needed a sign, Melissa, it's Cosmo DiNardo.
He was a predator. He was a straight up predator.
He was dangerous too. He had gotten mm-hmm. kicked out of Arcadia University because of his violent temper. He was caught with a handgun on campus. He was consistently trying to fight with people. He was selling guns. He was selling sneakers online. When he would sell sneakers, there would be a picture of the shoe sitting there that he was trying to sell. And next to it would be a giant caliber bullet that goes in like a hunting rifle, just sitting next to the shoe, just showing off.
To be intimidating.
Yeah, to be intimidating.
Yeah.
So, but as like douchey as Cosmo was, he was also very popular in his circle of friends, and whether or not they were actual friends or not, I don't know, or if they were latching on to him because he had access to one of the biggest properties in Solbury, mm-hmm. and Cosmo's parents hooked him up with toys. This guy had dirt bikes, ATVs, guns, and a playground that he could just use because they didn't even live there. They lived in Bensalem. So free reign. And I think that these friends actually even commented that they felt a certain unease when they were around Cosmo. Even they were close with him, they felt this kind of edginess when they were around him.
And you know, yeah, you are only as good as the company you surround yourself with. So if that's the type of people you're friends with, you need to rethink your situation. Cosmo is just such an arrogant, dopey-looking, pretentious little shit. And his parents bailed him out of everything. And we talked about this last week with my case and how accountable are parents and nature versus nurture and all of that. And I think in this situation, his parents knowingly provided him with those quote-unquote toys that you mentioned. And I think they're just as accountable as he is. He was never, ever held accountable for anything.
Completely agree. And I think that was the foundation for this entire case. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that a lot in part two. But from an investigative standpoint, it's clear to say that Cosmo was now a huge person of interest. Unfortunately, he is still MIA. So what happens next is important, though. So at 2 a.m. on Sunday, July 9th, Solbury police on routine patrol stumble upon a car left in the Peddler's Village parking lot. And that's mm-hmm. that shopping center that we just talked about. But it's not just any car. It's Mark Sturgis's. And mm-hmm. nothing of evidentiary value is found inside. It just looked like a parked car. It's like Mark just kind of parked it, closed the door, and walked away. But I can tell you that the shopping center, you know, there's zero reason for a 20-something to be there unless you're meeting someone for lunch or something.
Yeah, but there's not a whole lot of stores that would appeal to like a 20-year-old boy there.
Exactly right. So that's a lesser-known coincidence that people are like, that little fact doesn't even mm-hmm. add up. So as you can see, investigators are starting to think that the farm is ground zero for something bad because it's only 2 miles from Peddler's Village where Mark's car was found. So walking distance. And that this farm could hold the answers to whatever happened to these boys. So before they can put together a search warrant, though, their prime person of interest surfaces. Oh. Cosmo DiNardo walks right into the police station. Going, hey, I heard you were looking for me. As if like he doesn't know anything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that is where I'm going to end part one. You will have to you will have to tune in next week.
Gonna leave us hanging like that.
Yep. We're gonna find out what Cosmo has to say. And let me tell you, you do not want to miss it because this story is only just beginning.
You're right. And I think we should just give everyone like a heads up that this is just gonna make you mad. I'm mad. And I think about this probably more often than I should. But like writing Cosmo a letter and being like, you are a pathetic douche. Like,
I,
You are this spoiled upper middle class little bitch who thought he was so gangster. And it's like, in reality, he wouldn't last a second with the people that he's trying to emulate. They would laugh in his ugly old face.
That's a true statement. So I guess we'll find out what happens.
Well, we will talk to everyone next week. And remember, just because they have fun toys doesn't mean that they're not perverts.